mornings. I'm Chris Oakes, and coming up today, back-to-back hurricanes have caused billions of dollars in damage and left thousands of Americans homeless, and the natural reaction is to want to do something. Unfortunately, many con artists are trying to capitalize on that. We'll talk about how to avoid the scams and actually help those in need. Also this morning, cooler weather in this week's forecast is a reminder that the season of respiratory illnesses is coming. What are the early indications on how bad this year will be? And the Hancock County OSU Extension wants to help you stay healthy this fall and winter with a series focusing on wellness in all its forms. We'll have details. This is the Good Mornings Podcast Edition for Monday, October 14th, 2024. So is it Columbus Day or is it Indigenous Peoples Day? This is the thing about Columbus Day. We can't even actually really decide on what to call it. Because, of course, in recent years, the more we learn about Christopher Columbus and what he actually did, his treatment of the native people of the Americas, something in the minds of many, not something we're celebrating. And so they say, well, maybe it should be Indigenous Peoples Day. In some places, they call it that instead. It doesn't really matter to me one way or the other. I certainly understand the concerns with Christopher Columbus's legacy and all of that. On the other hand, he did become the first person to, quote unquote, discover the Americas. Not that someone else wouldn't have. If he didn't, but he did. He was the one. So, you know, there is that. Maybe we could do both. Maybe we could have a Columbus Day and an Indigenous Peoples Day. That would be fine with me. Maybe do one on a Friday, one on a Monday, or on a Monday, Tuesday, whatever. Give us a four-day weekend. That would be fine. I wouldn't mind that at all. So call it what you want, though. It is kind of a sort of holiday. A sort of holiday, because this is one of those that I never really know what's open and what's closed, right? We're here. I think most people will be working today. Schools, though, most schools are closed. Banks, some of them are closed. Maybe most of them are closed, but I don't know. I never really know. Most government offices are closed. Although not all federal government offices are closed, but at the state and particularly the local level, I know a lot of local government workers will trade their day off on Columbus Day for the day after Thanksgiving and make that an extended weekend. And by the way, it is Thanksgiving Day in Canada. So they don't even worry about the whole Columbus Day controversy. They just make it Thanksgiving Day in Canada. So there's, and at first I thought, you know, that's just weird, you know, do Thanksgiving. But on the other hand, I'm almost surprised that we haven't moved Thanksgiving in this country to what we now call Columbus Day. I mean, think about it. They try Thanksgiving, the traditional beginning of the Christmas shopping season, they try to keep pushing that earlier and earlier every year. Why don't we just make it official? Make this Thanksgiving Day like Canada and be done with it and say, okay, fine. You can have, you know, 3 months of, or 2 months or whatever it is of Christmas shopping. Why don't we do that and settle it once and for all? Anyway, so a lot of government offices are closed. Some banks are closed. Schools are closed. In most cases, but it is business as usual at the stock market. There's no mail delivery, which I used to think was a big deal because nobody could send me a bill today. Used to really love that because I knew that no matter what else happened today, I would not find out that I owed someone money. But these days with, you know, online billing and, you know, automated computer billing, they can bill you on Christmas Day if they want. But anyway, so that's not always a big thing. No mail delivery. You want to check on things like trash collection. Anyway, retailers, restaurants, most of those will be open as usual. So whatever, it's happy Columbus Day to you if indeed you celebrate that sort of thing. You may have the day off. Some of the most interesting and buzzworthy stories of the day here. Enough on Columbus Day. The Ohio Wildlife Center is reaching out for help. Apparently, over the weekend, the Ohio Wildlife Center lost about $60,000 in donated food. David Donahue is a spokesperson for the Ohio Wildlife Center, says one of their freezers stopped working, and a lot of frozen animal food thawed, meaning that most of it had to be tossed. Now, this is an organization that feeds and cares for orphaned and injured wild animals around particularly the central Ohio region, and they are looking for donations to help rebuild their supplies. If you would like to make a contribution, you can do so through their website, ohiowildlifecenter.org. So I would point that out. That is, man, that's terrible. As they help orphaned animals and wild animals that have been injured in the wild, nurse them back to health. But obviously those animals have to eat. So make your donations. Let's see, what else is going on here? You remember back during the Olympics when they introduced breakdancing as a competition at the Summer Olympics this year. And I don't think it'll be back. It was kind of, not many people took it seriously. And is this really an Olympic sport and all of that? But this is kind of interesting. New research suggests that breakdancers could be more at risk for developing head spin hole. This is actually a condition they call head spin hole. It's a lump on the top of the skull that could be caused by spinning on one's head, which is a common breakdancing move. And I think it's pretty much unique to breakdancing. I'm not sure there are too many people who aren't breakdancers going around spinning on their head. So there's not much, not many other people who... One dancer sought medical attention after feeling the need to wear a hat in public because his head had become so deformed. Doctors discovered a 13-inch lump. The top of his head was not cancerous, fortunately, but, it's a 13-inch lump on the top of your head. You don't want that. So researchers also found those who practiced head spins more than 3 times a week much more likely to suffer hair loss, which is not necessarily a big surprise either, but interesting. Head spin hole. There's one more reason to be careful, when you're practicing your breakdancing. Did you hear about this? Bath and Body Works is discontinuing one of their seasonal candles because some people complain that the design on the label kind of looks like the hooded robes of the Ku Klux Klan. Again, I don't think that was what it was intended to look like, but some people, I haven't seen this myself, so I can't render an opinion of my own, but you can look it up. The design is a decorative folded snowflake cutout, but it has a number of parts that people thought looked like the eye holes and the white hoods that the KKK wears. The company says any similarity was unintentional, and they apologize to anyone who might have been offended by this. They have discontinued that particular candle. Let's see. And elsewhere, among the first things that you need to know, the most interesting and buzzworthy stories of the day, this I thought was kind of interesting. What do you want to be when you grow up? They asked members of Gen Z, which, by the way, Generation Z, the oldest members of Generation Z are in their upper 20s now. So presumably they already know what they want to be when they grow up. But the youngest members of Generation Z are only starting to reach their teen years. So they asked these younger Gen Zers, what do you want to be when you grow up? Number one answer, a model. That is the most wanted job in this new ranking followed by artist, photographer, and makeup artist. Those are the things that young Gen Zers want to be. Singer, personal trainer, and actor fill out the back half of the top 10. Influencer is at number 10. You know, a number of young people think that they can make a living being a social media influencer. But it's only number 10. Jobs like doctor, dentist, and nurse come into play starting at number 24. The least coveted job, according to the survey, information technology. Nobody wants to be an IT tech. That's kind of interesting. The survey conducted by Class Central, which is a search engine for online courses, and it was based on Instagram hashtags. Because young people share all of their hopes and dreams on Instagram. Interestingly, they culled this from Instagram hashtags, but influencer, social media influencer, only came out at number 10. So, and by the way, regardless of what you want to be when you grow up, maybe you should let your kids know, your young people know, as they start getting these big dreams about what they're going to be when they grow up, that at the end of the day, it's not what you know, it is who you know. A new survey has found that 91.3% of respondents would accept their dream job if it was offered through a personal connection. You know, if you had an in, if you had a hook to get that dream job, that would be fine with the vast majority of people, because I think we all know it's not what you know, it's who you know, right? 72% or 70.2% of those in the survey say they have received a leg up on the job search through their network of connections. 62% admit to reaching out to friends for job opportunities at some point during the course of their career. And 90.6% think that simply being handed a job based on who you know is unethical. But 91.3% of respondents would accept their dream job if it was offered through a personal connection. So we might think it's unethical, but we'll take it anyway. That's the bottom line. I'm reading from that survey. So no matter whether you are dreaming of being a model or a singer or a makeup artist, photographer, or even an influencer, whatever your dream job is, better get to know some folks. Shake some hands and, you know, make some friends on the inside to get the leg up when it comes time to search for that dream job. Just kind of interesting stuff there. Among the first things you need to know, the most interesting and buzzworthy story is to get this Monday morning started.
WFIN News, I'm Matt Demchek. Your WTOL 11 weather, partly cloudy today, a high in the mid-50s, partly to mostly cloudy tonight, a low in the mid-30s. Officials at Adamas say drug overdose deaths in Hancock County have dropped 60% over the past 3 years. Adamas is the Hancock County Board of Alcohol, Drug Addiction, and Mental Health Services. While officials say it's difficult to determine the exact cause of the significant drop in overdose deaths, they say making Narcan more readily available is definitely a factor.
Due to the saturation of naloxone, so the distribution between the treatment facilities, Hancock Public Health, Focus gives out Narcan, Family Resource Center gives out Narcan. So really just saturating the county with the Narcan has reduced the overdoses.
Kaylin Summers, harm reduction coordinator at Hancock Public Health, says the overdose reversing medication Narcan is also available in some public vending machines across the county. Get more in the story on our website. One Ohio family has definitely had their share of bad luck with weather over the past year. Their home in Indian Lake was damaged in the March tornadoes, and now their Florida home has been hit by both hurricanes Helene and Milton.
The Hoffmans had just finished up repairs at their home at Indian Lake in time for Hurricane Helene, then Milton, to hit their neighborhood in Florida.
At their Indian Lake home, they had about $50,000 in damage. For the last 10 years, the family has been sharing their time between Ohio and St. Petersburg, Florida. Their neighborhood flooded after Hurricane Helene. Then they watched the path of Hurricane Milton, hoping it would spare their home in evacuation zone A.
ONN's Carla Rogner reporting. Hancock County 4-H is celebrating a successful 2024. This year saw more than 600 4-H youth participating in more than 1,000 projects, and 79 youth represented Hancock County at the state fair. Accomplishments from this year will be commemorated at this year's celebration of 4-H held at the Old Millstream Center at the Hancock County Fairgrounds on Tuesday night. Then registration for the 2025 4-H year will begin in November. Get more details in this story on our website. Remember, you can always get more news online at WFIN.com.
And now our cover story this morning. Back-to-back hurricanes have caused billions of dollars in damage and left thousands of Americans homeless. And the natural reaction, of course, is to want to do something, want to reach out and help those who have been impacted. It's one of the great character traits of Americans is that we want to help our fellow Americans in need. Unfortunately, many con artists are trying to capitalize on that, our good-natured sensibilities. And so I want to talk this morning about how to avoid the scams and actually make sure that we are helping those who are in need. Lane Montz is with us, president CEO of the local Better Business Bureau, Northwest Ohio and Southeast Michigan. And Lane, this is not new. I mean, this happens after every disaster, every emergency, really doesn't matter what it is, especially when it makes big headlines, is that the scam artists come out of the woodwork.
Yeah, I don't think that's anything new, Chris. That's probably been going on since the beginning of time, right? The difference with today's society is technology makes it possible to cheat the generous at a scale never seen before. That's the difference, I think.
And also, the technology makes it more, it makes it a lot easier to mask your true intentions. You can certainly make a legitimate sounding appeal through online channels more so than it used to be, you know, going door to door or picking up the phone.
Yeah, I think it's like a digital medicine wagon traveling through the West, right? It's selling the snake oil and the hair tonics, but it's digital now and it reaches all industries, unfortunately. So we just always have to be on guard.
So what are some of the telltale signs to look for? How do we avoid the scams and make sure that we are actually helping those who need help?
Yeah, so there are a number of telltale signs. They're the same telltale signs as with any scam. A press of time, in other words, creating a sense of urgency. The people asking for your money are reaching out to you directly, personally, which is, there are legitimate charities and relief efforts that do that, but they're really not as common as you might think. It's usually up to you to go find the organization that you want to give to. So if they're reaching out to you directly through a generic looking text or email, that's probably cause to pump the brakes, be suspicious, you know. That's the first thing.
Obviously, if you do get one of those solicitations, again, especially if you have donated to a charity before, maybe you are on their email list and maybe you actually get an appeal, but it's probably best not to click on a link that's in an email.
So this is what I say. This is what BBB says. You may get contacted. It may be legitimate. It may not be, right? I think as technology gets more sophisticated, it's going to be harder and harder to tell. The key is don't touch that dial, as they used to say on the Batman show, right? Don't touch that dial. Don't click on that link. Instead, if you want to give, and Americans, like you said, super generous people, maybe the most generous in the history of the world. If you want to donate to hurricane relief, then go ahead and be proactive and do your own research on the web, do your own research using other third-party resources like the BBB and its sister organization, the Wise Giving Alliance.
Mm-hmm.
The Wise Giving Alliance can be found at give.org, and they have a list of charities that are pre-approved that are participating in hurricane relief. So there's a nice list there. You can get a report. These are names that you would recognize most of the time. And then there's a link to donate. And the good part about that is The Wise Giving Alliance exists to vet charities to make sure they're legitimate. That's what they exist for. That's their mission, and that's what they live for. So if they've put out a list with a link, then you can be pretty confident that's legitimate. Whereas if you just respond to something, it's a lot tougher to know. It might be on the up and up, and it might not.
You know, there are a couple of nuances here too that I want to kind of touch on. There are an awful lot of things that are circulating online about what charities actually funnel the majority of their donations to those in need, and how many, and what their overhead is, how much of the donations are reserved for overhead costs like salaries and administration, that kind of thing. How reliable are those, and should that be an equation, or how big of a part of the equation should that be?
Well, so all charities are required to file public tax returns called 990s. You can look them up. They are available online for free.
Mm-hmm.
If you want to get out your calculator, your abacus, your slide rule, whatever you use, and try to determine whether their overhead is too high, and whether you think that too much is going to overhead, I caution against that because it's false to claim or expect that any reputable charitable organization can operate on a 0% margin.
Mm-hmm.
If you think you're only going to give to causes that say 100% of what you're giving will go to the hurricane relief or to whatever relief, that could be true. And if they're able to pull that off, bully for them, that's great. But that's not a long-term business model. It's not a long-term formula for sustainability.
Yeah.
It's reasonable for charities and support organizations to have overhead, and sometimes it's substantial overhead. So, one of the things that BBB recommends is if you're going to donate to a relief fund, look for charities that have physical presences in the community. Now, I understand, in eastern Tennessee, western North Carolina, right now, so many things are damaged, that's going to be a little bit more challenging.
Mm-hmm.
But typically you don't want to give to just a charity that exists only online. You want to look for relief organizations that have physical presence in the affected area. You probably, even though it's tempting to want to give clothing and food and physical donations, it may not be the best way to help the people at that moment. The best way probably is to donate money to a reputable relief organization, again, with a physical presence in the area,
yeah,
who can decide on the ground how to distribute that kind of stuff. And here's the thing. That does require paying salaries, trucks, gas, insurance.
Right.
It does require overhead. So I caution against drawing a line and saying, I won't give unless at least a certain percentage goes. If you look at Give.org's list of approved charities supporting Hurricane Helene relief, for instance, all of those organizations are solid, and all of them are going to have overhead. So it's unlikely that they're going to be able to get 100% of your donation to the people that need it. It's just not realistic.
As you mentioned, probably the most effective way to help those in need is to donate monetarily. And that kind of leads to the other point, because again, you see this, we've seen it in the hurricane relief effort, and you've seen it in past relief efforts for this, that, or the other thing with respect to disasters. People in local communities who have some sort of connection, perhaps, to a community that's been affected, and will organize a local donation drive. Maybe it's for food or water or clothing or whatever it might happen to be. And they say, hey, we're going to load up this truck and we're going to drive it down there ourselves. And these are mostly localized efforts from our neighbors, local businesses, that kind of thing. I don't know that we can say that those are scams necessarily, but they may not necessarily be the most efficient way of helping.
Yeah, that's it's tough because there are people who feel really moved to, drive water down or drive food down, and they do get it done usually though on a bit of a smaller scale,
right,
Chris. And, we're talking about the damage from Helene, of course, is incredibly widespread. Every little bit does help, but I just think that the wisest approach is to use a vetted organization, that you go to their website. You're not necessarily clicking on the link that they send to you, because that could be a spam, could be fraudulent.
Right.
You go to their website, you call their 800 number, you contact their staff. Their staff, the American Red Cross and other major organizations, you know, the American Kidney Fund, Global Giving, Feeding America, Salvation Army, Save the Children, they're going to not only have their own local chapters nearby to some extent, they're also going to have partnerships in place with other local charities. And even if it's not their people driving down delivering stuff, they're going to be able to connect with local organizations whose job it is to distribute help in times like that.
Yeah.
So they have the connections and the partnerships. I don't want to say, and I never will say, that somebody who actually does get a truck loaded up and take it down, I'm never going to say don't help those people, but I guess make sure you can vet them properly. And if you know them, that's a big difference than if you just get a random spam from somebody saying,
yeah,
we're taking a truck with water down to, you know, eastern Tennessee. There might be a better way to get help down there than to, you know, go buy water at Costco and give it to them. It's just, I don't want to say it's wrong,
right,
but I just say there might be better way.
Yeah. A lot of things to keep in mind, because, again, it's their natural inclination is that we want to help, but we want to make sure that we are actually helping, and we are avoiding the scams, and making sure that the donations that we are making are doing the most good possible. Again, Lane Montz is with us, President and CEO of the Better Business Bureau here locally. We've got a link on our webpage for more information on vetting those charities and making sure that we don't fall for the scams that are always out there when these things happen. Lane, thanks very much for taking the time. We appreciate it.
Chris, thank you, and WFN, appreciate both. Thank you.
So this week, temperatures be taking a distinct and noticeable turn to more autumn-like conditions, with high temperatures in the 50s and 60s, lows dipping into the 30s for the next several days, talking about maybe our first frost of the season by the middle part of the week. And you know what all of that means, right? It won't be long before cold and flu season will begin to take hold. Last week, Blanchard Valley Health System put out a reminder about taking this seriously, cited evidence of more rapid spread of respiratory illnesses like influenza and COVID-19, which COVID, of course, in most cases is not the life-threatening virus that it was 4 years ago, but still something you certainly want to do what you can to avoid. I mean, nobody wants this, right? It's not the emergency that it once was, but still, it's unpleasant. It's not something that you want to deal with. And, of course, let's not forget about RSV, which was also a significant concern last year, as you will recall, especially for very young and very old segments of the population, the elderly and the and infants. So with all of this, and again, very top of mind because the weather is turning this week, what do we know about what is coming this year? Joining us this morning with the latest data, the latest projections, and some advice on preventing and managing these seasonally common illnesses is Dr. Preeti Parikh, Executive Medical Editor for GoodRx. And Dr. Parikh, we all want to know what we can expect this cold and flu season. So what metrics or what indicators are you seeing that give you clues as to how bad or how widespread this could be this fall and winter, and maybe even into early spring?
Yeah, so there's two trackers that I particularly watch and I recommend other people to check out. One is from the CDC.gov that looks at flu, COVID, and RSV, and seeing what the trends are happening in America and the illness to kind of give us a sense. So they keep track of that. And then goodrx.com/flu savings, we look at a tracker there where we look at prescription fills. Like, are we seeing an uptick in antiviral medications being prescribed and filled for flu and COVID? Do we see antibiotics for complications such as pneumonia, and keep track of that? And both those trackers right now show us that we're on, you know, trend similar to last year. But there's some optimism, too, because now that we have flu and COVID vaccines and for our high-risk population, RSV, and we have treatments for flu and COVID, that potentially we could actually see a less severe and less damaging season of flu, COVID, and RSV. But we all as a community have to do our part and get those vaccines.
Yeah. Well, that would certainly be good news if it is not a real bad season. Let's talk a little bit about what the guidelines are. Obviously, you know, the flu, I think is for the flu shots and such, has been pretty much the same for as long as we can remember. What about COVID and RSV? What are the latest vaccine guidelines here?
Yeah, so as you mentioned, flu is an annual shot now, everyone 6 months and older. With the flu shot, you can actually also get the COVID vaccine at the same time. And the COVID vaccine is also for 6 months and older. And similar to the flu in the sense that now, this year, the COVID vaccine, even if you got it last year, there are different strains circulating. So in order to really get the best protection, you need to get another shot this year for a COVID vaccine to make sure you're protected against the strains that are circulating. So get that COVID and flu if you're 6 months and older. You can even get it together, so it's one visit. Then for the RSV vaccine and immunization, now that is really for a very high-risk population, and it came out last year. And so for those guidelines, the individuals that are 60 years and older that have chronic health conditions like diabetes, heart disease, asthma, you should talk to your healthcare professional and get your RSV vaccine. And if you have another health condition, check with them to see if you qualify. For those above age 75, everyone should get the RSV vaccine. Pregnant women are eligible because you also get to send that protection over to your babies, your newborn babies in uterus, which is really, really important and amazing. And then for our babies that are 8 months and younger and our toddlers that have chronic health conditions, there is an RSV immunization, which is a little different than the vaccine that the elderly are getting, where it only lasts a couple months, their antibodies. It is it's the shot, and it lasts a couple months during the RSV season, which is October through May.
Okay.
So it's a great opportunity to help prevent serious illness and hospitalization.
I want to really quickly go back to something that you mentioned and have you expand on that. Why is it that these respiratory illnesses can worsen conditions like asthma, although I guess asthma, we can understand that, but like diabetes and heart disease as well. What's the connection there?
Yeah, so when you have diabetes and heart conditions and other chronic health conditions, it's just harder for your body to fight these infections. And also, it can just cause more serious complications. And so things like pneumonia and other things like that, that when you have that high-risk population that have these chronic health conditions, they're just more at risk of developing these serious complications from the virus, whereas someone who doesn't have it may be able to fight it off and not develop a pneumonia, but those individuals are more high risk of contracting more serious complications.
Gotcha. Long and short of it is, this is not something that you want in tandem. So obviously, want to take a special care there. And also, just to clarify, when we're talking about these vaccines, we're talking about two or perhaps three different vaccines. You can get the flu and the COVID shots at the same time, but we are talking about two separate shots.
Yes, they are two separate shots. They're not combined, but you can get them at the same time.
Okay.
And if you do qualify for RSV, right now, most people still say to space that out. So talk to your healthcare professional getting that one.
Very good. Now, having said all of that, obviously, any vaccine, not 100% protection. I mean, that's great protection, but nothing is ever 100%. And so we still might feel ill. Heck, just getting the common cold, forget the flu and COVID and RSV, just the common cold can put you out for a couple of days. So prevention is a key part of this. What steps can we take to stay healthy and prevent illness in the first place?
Yeah, so as well, number one, which we just talked about, was immunizations and vaccines.
Right.
But other things that people can do are what we've been learning for years now, and also when we were kids at school, making sure that we wash our hands, making sure that we're not touching our face after we touch the surface, making sure that we sneeze and cough into our elbow, and make sure that it's the droplets aren't spreading everywhere. And then, of course, if you are sick or your family member is sick, try to stay home. Don't go to work and school because that just spreads the illness. And also for yourself, to make sure that you get rest and that your body can fight this infection and you can get healthier quicker.
Yeah. All very important advice. And also, I'll let you get the plug in as well for those treatments. If and when we do come down with something, cold and flu season, how can we save money?
Yeah, so goodrx.com/flu savings is an important site because as my patients and myself and colleagues and everyone I know, even if you have insurance, deductibles are high, copays can be, you know, much more expensive than expected. And then those people that don't even have insurance, like the high cost of medications and vaccines too. Like if you don't have insurance, you don't have coverage. And even with insurance, it may be more expensive. So definitely check out goodrx.com/flu savings if you have insurance or don't, because last year alone, we saved over $20 million for Americans, not only for treatments during the flu and cold season, but also for vaccinations. So our mission and something that I'm really passionate about is getting that access and affordability to everyone out there, because it's easy for me to come out and tell everyone, hey, you need to vaccinate, or if you get sick, get those treatments while people are making decisions of, I need to pay for food, I need to pay for housing.
Right.
So definitely please check out goodrx.com/flu savings to see if you can get a better price for all of these important measures.
Dr. Preeti Parikh, Executive Medical Editor for GoodRx, with us this morning. Dr. Parikh, thanks very much for taking the time. We appreciate it.
Thank you for having me.
Information that makes a difference. Good Mornings with Chris Oakes on 1330 WFIN, WFIN.com, and 95.5 FM.
We interrupt this program to bring you a broken news alert.
Dateline Portland, Oregon, where officers on Wednesday morning pulled over Reginald Reynolds and his passenger Mia Bagenstos, because the car they were driving in had been reported stolen. Ran the plate. They discovered it was a stolen vehicle that they had been looking for. And you think that's a pretty good day for a police officer. You bust a couple for a stolen vehicle. That's a pretty good day. But wait, it gets better. Upon searching the stolen vehicle, police uncovered a handgun, $1,300 in cash, assorted drug paraphernalia, and a bag that was labeled definitely not a bag full of drugs. That's what it said on the outside of the bag. It said definitely not a bag full of drugs. Police were not convinced by the label, so they opened it, and sure enough, inside, they found about a half a pound of methamphetamine and other drugs. As it turns out, it was a bag full of drugs. The pair were charged with possession of a stolen vehicle and trafficking in narcotics. They were probably stunned that ingenious disguise for that bag still got them arrested. It seemed like the perfect plan to label it definitely not a bag full of drugs. And yet it didn't work. Let's see. Definitely not a bag full of drugs. Speaking of stolen vehicles, a Denver, Colorado, with three stolen car convictions, allegedly attended a probation meeting in another stolen vehicle. Who couldn't have seen that coming? He's got three convictions already. When the man walked into the Jefferson County Courthouse in suburban Denver, deputies checked security cameras and found that he had arrived in a stolen vehicle. they were probably checking just to make sure. I mean, he does have three conditions. Initially, the man whose name is not given in the report, the man initially denied any wrongdoing and then claimed a friend let him borrow the car. They weren't buying it. I don't know if they checked with a friend to see, but basically the sheriff's office said he may have arrived in a stolen car. He left in one of ours. And not to be outdone on the stolen car front, here's yet another story out of the Bronx, New York City, where police say Uvaldo Gonzalez is under arrest after crashing a stolen car into a Wendy's restaurant in northern New Jersey. This was in Hackensack just after 2:30 Sunday morning. The crash took place after Mr. Gonzalez allegedly stole the car at knife point in Manhattan a short time before, drove across the bridge into the Bronx, he's from the Bronx. He stole the car in Manhattan, drove across the bridge into New Jersey, crashed the car into Wendy's in Hackensack, then carjacked a second vehicle and took off. Police later found that car on the George Washington Bridge and then located Mr. Gonzalez a short distance away. Police say he then tried to steal a police cruiser while he was being arrested. That's where his carjacking spree came to an end. Actually tried to carjack a police cruiser. Yeah. Oh, goodness. And how about this? Speaking of stolen vehicles, and in this case, out of Detroit, something stolen from a vehicle. This is actually really sad. A retired and disabled teacher in Detroit lost his mother a few days ago, and now he fears he may not be able to attend her funeral after a thief broke into his car and stole the steering wheel. Didn't steal the whole car, just stole the steering wheel. It happened Friday morning. Ed Norwood bought the vehicle a month ago, and he had been using it to visit his mother at the nursing home. But now she has passed away. Somebody stole the steering wheel, and now he may not be able to make her funeral. Mr. Norwood said, hey, if the thief, the steering wheel, what's it worth, $100? Mr. Norwood said that if the thief would have just asked him for $100, he would have given it to him, no questions asked, rather than just stealing the steering wheel. Who would steal someone's steering wheel? That's hopefully, and I'm sure that, once word of this story gets out, they'll make sure that he gets to his mother's funeral. But gee, mini Christmas, man! Stealing someone's steering wheel. It's terrible. And finally, in the broken news this morning, out of Cobb County, Georgia, the local sheriff is in a bit of hot water after a body camera video showed him calling in his deputies after an employee at a Burger King restaurant messed up his order. Do you know who I am? I have connections. The sheriff, apparently, the video is obtained by a local TV station. The video shows Sheriff Craig Owens instructing his deputies to find out the name of the franchise manager after the fast food restaurant failed to hold the mayo on his Whopper. So he called the cops, and he's the sheriff, so he can call the cops. He said, I don't want my money back. I just want to find out who owns this place so I can make an official complaint. Now, some people have called this an abuse of power, but Sheriff Owens defended himself, saying it was a business dispute, and any citizen can file a can call deputies for a similar reason. And he said, but I would imagine that if the sheriff calls the deputies, then they probably respond with a little more eagerness. You know what I mean? I'm just guessing that they were probably a little more eager to figure out what was all going on with this, given that it was the sheriff. So there you go. That is today's broken news. I said, hold the mayo. Do you know who I am? I have friends in high places. There you go. That is today's broken news report, an update on the odd and unusual side of the headlines. We now return you to your regularly scheduled programming.
From October of 1938, WFIN is pleased to present War of the Worlds.
Those strange beings who landed in the Jersey farmlands tonight are the vanguard of an invading army from the planet Mars.
War of the Worlds, presented on WFIN by Pete's Auto Service and Wolfie's.
Listen Tuesday evening, October 22nd at 6 p.m. with an encore on Halloween night at 6 on 1330 WFIN, WFIN.com, and now at 95.5 FM.
And now your daily download, the numbers behind the news and the statistics that shape our lives. Halloween right around the corner, and Halloween candy is not immune from the effects of inflation. According to a new breakdown of the data that was recently published on the website, pop culture website, dig.com, Three Musketeers is now the most expensive Halloween candy. The most expensive candy you can hand out to the little beggars is Three Musketeers at 79 cents an ounce. 79 cents an ounce. That is a price increase of 73% since last year. But that is not the candy that has seen the biggest price hikes year over year. Milky Way bars are 97% more than last year, at number two overall, going from 39 cents an ounce to 77 cents an ounce, just a hair behind Three Musketeers, a huge price increase. On the other hand, Skittles come in at the cheapest of all of the Halloween candies, just 32 cents an ounce, and that is an increase of 16% from last year. In fact, non-chocolate candies seem to have been impacted the least by inflation year over year. The smallest increase in price year over year, M&M's seem to be least impacted by inflation, up just 13% compared to 2023. So I guess that is a chocolate. But outside of that, the non-chocolate candies appear to be the biggest value. And especially with Skittles, at just 32 cents an ounce, that's a bargain right there, because who doesn't love Skittles, right? By the way, candy corn is up just 16% and is among the cheapest. I just point that out because, you know, everybody loves candy corn. So a little bit earlier, we were talking about how the cooler weather in this week's forecast is a reminder that the season of respiratory illnesses is coming. Talking about avoiding the common cold and the flu and COVID, RSV, all of that fun stuff. Well, the Hancock County OSU Extension wants to help you stay healthy this fall and winter with a series focusing on wellness in all its forms. And Jennifer Little is with us here this morning from the Hancock County OSU Extension, Family and Consumer Sciences educator. And Jennifer, thanks very much for dropping by. We appreciate it.
Thanks for having me, Chris.
So, yeah, this is the time when, you know, wellness, I mean, we think about this, obviously, our physical wellness, but even our mental wellness and all of these other types of wellness really become a very important thing for a number of reasons.
Yes, as we approach the holidays, thinking about stress, thinking about financial wellness, thinking about those relationship wellness, you know, family mealtime.
Absolutely.
You know, at its best. Yes. So, yes, I am part of a statewide extension team called Live Healthy, Live Well. And twice a year, we offer an email wellness challenge, and we pick a different theme every season. We offer it in the spring and in the fall. And this, we are going to be starting next week with Exploring the Heart of It All. And that will be a six-week wellness challenge. Mm-hmm. And we got talking about this actually within the past year, thinking about Ohio and many, because The educators are all from different communities around Ohio, and we were talking about the many wonderful resources that Ohio has to help people stay healthy.
Okay.
And we thought it might be kind of fun. We also thought about, oh, fall road trip, leaf looking. We thought, well, let's tie wellness in with some of these great things that we have all over the state of Ohio.
Okay. All right.
And so we're kind of exploring the heart of it. Also, each week, participants will receive an email about some dimension of wellness. I'm actually partnering with a gal from Southeast Ohio, and we are talking about shopping small, financial wellness, and talking
another big thing of the holiday season. Yeah,
so and that will be, you know, right before Black Friday. So, but we're going to be exploring. She actually is from McCutcheonsville, and is talking about actually McConnellsville. I'm going to switch those around. But she's from Southeast Ohio, and she has a wonderful little local. I almost called a venue, but she was talking about the wonderful ways that they feature local artists, local local vendors, and it's also they also feature local events like wellness events and things like that. And there's so many wonderful communities around Ohio that have wonderful things like that. Here in Hancock County, I think of all of the wonderful resources. I was part of the No Wrong Door meeting just about a week ago, and all of the organizations that are there to help our local community with everything from mental health, financial health, legal, you know, legal help and all of those, you know, but we thought it'd be fun, again, kind of exploring Ohio and also exploring wellness and being able to look in your own backyard and finding some of those resources that can really help us along in our wellness journey.
So this is a 6-week program, if you will. As you mentioned, it involves basically emails that you will get, some ideas, thought starters, resources that you can avail yourselves of. How do folks sign up for that?
Yes. Well, actually, they can go to go.osu.edu / LHLW Hancock, and they can just enroll there, answer a few questions. And it's free to participate. You'll be getting an email every week. They'll also be invited to participate in a Wednesday Lunch and Learn webinar on that week's topic.
Okay.
And if you can't attend that live, it's from 12 to 12:30 on Wednesdays. You can also get, you'll get the recordings and you can watch it later.
Okay.
People will also get a bingo card that they can kind of track their progress and, and challenge themselves to do some little steps towards wellness in the various different dimensions of wellness. Like we said, there's social, there's emotional, there's financial, physical, and occupational. So it's a fun thing. And again, it's a fun way to explore Ohio. You might find some things out about Ohio that you never knew.
Sure.
We were talking about intellectual wellness, and actually the oldest public library in the United States is in Ohio. And we were encouraging people.
I did not know that.
Yes. Yeah. So in Van Wert County. So anyway,
so fairly close by.
Yes, yes. Even. So they'll be learning some Ohio trivia and also being able to enjoy,
you know,
taking some new steps towards their own wellness.
What I really like about this is the thought of all of the different dimensions of wellness. You had there are 9 total that you're looking at, and I know we've talked about this before. We don't think about all of these aspects of wellness. Again, when you list them off, when you start talking about it, you say, oh, yeah, okay, I see that. But in our just day-to-day routines, we don't necessarily think about all
of these. Well, and I think some of it comes out of, we talk about the social determinants of health, thinking about challenges that people have that do contribute to physical health challenges.
Well, and that's the other thing. So many of them, there's a lot of crossover there.
Oh, yes.
I mean, you know, financial health can go toward stress and mental health and even physical health.
Right.
So there's a lot of crossover, you know, one thing leading to another kind of thing.
Yeah, I was just listening, you know, talk about addictions, talked about even gambling addictions. I was listening to a news story the other day, and they were talking about the, you know, gambling addictions in Ohio and how that is a financial thing. It's a relationship strain, and it can lead ultimately to, you know, going down a bad road. So,
absolutely. By the way, speaking of health, this is another thing that's coming up actually in November. So we're looking ahead a little bit.
Yes.
But the next Dining with Diabetes class begins what, I guess, on the 31st? Is
yes,
that right?
Yes. Okay. It's starting on Halloween, yes. So November is Diabetes Awareness Month, and I partner with Julie Russell at Blanchard Valley Health Systems, and she and I try to offer a Dieting with Diabetes class a couple of times a year. Mm-hmm. We offered one in the spring in April, and it was very well received. We're offering one again in October, and it's a good time to think about eating healthy, because sometimes the holidays especially can be challenging for someone living with diabetes.
Mm-hmm.
So that class, it's a 4-week class, and people can sign up. I think I've gave you like the flyer on to put on your website, but
yeah.
You can contact me at my office. My email is little.18@osu.edu.
Mm-hmm.
But the cost is $40 per person or $60 per 2-person family. And it will be held on Thursdays from 11 to 1, and it does include lunch. So people will be eating. They'll get their lunch. They'll get to learn a lot about managing their diabetes. They will also learn about cooking tips and meal planning tips that will help them with managing their diabetes and, you know, receive a good meal at the same time.
Absolutely. And again, very, very valuable information as the holiday season approaches as well. And again, folks can just sign up by reaching out to you, reaching out to the extension office.
Yep. And there is there's also on our Facebook page, we'll have a QR code. You can actually sign up using a QR code.
Is there a deadline to sign up for that? I know
we're encouraging Friday, October 25th, so we have a week to kind of plan, because it does require buying groceries and making sure that we have handouts and stuff for all of the participants.
Okay. So the sooner the better. You can do that starting now.
Yes. So, and for those that need financial assistance, we do have scholarships available thanks to the Community Foundation. So don't let the finances keep you from participating. It's a great...
Because
a great
we don't want to add any stress.
Right. We don't want to add any stress. Very good. Yes. Very good.
Jennifer Little is Extension Educator, Family and Consumer Sciences at the Hancock County OSU Extension. We have a link on our webpage for more information about these programs. The Wellness Challenge, the email Wellness Challenge, Dining with Diabetes, that is coming up at the end of the month and into November as well. And Jennifer, thanks very much for dropping by. We appreciate it.
Thanks for having me, Chris. You have a great day.
And that will finish up the podcast for today. I want to thank all of our guests for joining us on the program, of course. And remember, you can get more information about all of the topics that we talk about each and every day on the program at our webpage. And that, once again, is goodmornings.net. Check us out online. Coming up tomorrow on the program, there are few issues more heartbreaking than homelessness among our neighbors and among America's veterans. We'll talk about both. So until tomorrow morning, that is Good Mornings for this morning. Now that you've had a good morning, go on out and make it a good day. We'll catch you back here tomorrow.